Hello and welcome to the Context Machine, episode number 583. I'm Brian Chaffin, your co-host with the Mo-host.
And I'm Jeff Gamet.
Read it. Your co-host. Read it. Read what it says.
The actual. Okay, fine. And I'm Jeff Gamet, your co-host with the actual Mo-host. Wait, I still have the rest of the line. Hold on. You can find us on contextmachine.io.
I don't really care about any of the rest of it. I just wanted you to read that. You can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us or on Twitter at contextmachine.
And today's episode is sponsored by Collide.
I'll tell you more about them later in the show. Let's see here.
I really thought I was going to be able to get through that line having seen it ahead of time.
So bad. Who writes this stuff, man? Good Lord.
I don't know. It's not me, people.
It's me. Also, me, by the way, is the fact that last week's show went up early this morning. Because it was after midnight. Nonetheless, this is the WWDC show. So we will have this up on time.
Right. And everyone, when Brian gets the show posted on time, give him positive feedback about that, because positive reinforcement helps build the routine and makes people feel better. But it's,
yeah, feel free to
stroke Brian's ego.
Feel free to leave a review, good or bad, on the iTunes. Is it called iTunes? What's it called these days? Apple Music? The podcast store?
Apple Music?
I don't know. Wherever Apple peddles these things for us. Leave us a review. Actually, wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review. We would appreciate it, good or bad. Feedback is welcome. Or something.
Yeah, maybe put a post-it note on your local coffee shop community board.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that's fantastic.
I just came up with that.
I like that idea.
That's really good.
That's going to get us listeners by the tens.
Right. And I feel bad because a while ago on Twitter, one of our followers came up with the best name for everyone.
Uh-oh.
And yes, that everyone that listens to the show, we can call them contextuals.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Okay. So which one of you said that? I apologize right now for not remembering your name. And now I will have to go back through my Twitter conversations to find who it was, so we can give you the big shout out for coming up with contextuals.
Really, this is just a testament to Jeff's lack of professionalism.
Oh, clearly.
Whereas Brian, I
look to you for guidance.
Okay. Well, you are following in the right path, sir. Okay. So this is the WWDC week thing, right? Apple did that thing.
They did that thing they do. Yes.
Right. I made myself watch it live because I knew that if I didn't watch it live, that I would procrastinate because I didn't need to cover anything except for the show. And then not watch it before.
And then you would just ask me during the show what they announced.
Well, yeah, I might have gone to read it somewhere. Maybe. It is interesting how things change when you're not actually in the daily coverage seat. Regardless, it was. Let me immediately digress from the things that we said we talk about. And. Mm-hmm. There was a lot to love about the show. All the goofiness with Craig Federighi was great. Personally, I'm sure there are some people who hated it, but I thought it was funny as can be.
There were definitely people that hated it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, and the fact that he was game enough to do the run thing and put his hand through his hair as he was
running
across the building.
It was very self-effacing.
I mean. Yeah.
Lots of the humor was self-effacing. Here is what I didn't like, though. I asked my friend Michael Mendelson, who is the person who did, I think, our second logo at the Mac Observer, 20 some odd years ago. And he did a set of icons for us too, or a set of smiley faces for us for our chat room. But anyway, regardless.
Oh, I didn't realize that's where those came from.
Yeah, it was Michael Mendelson, who is a professional video guy these days. And I asked him if, okay, here's the thing. So I'm listening in particular to Craig speak. And no matter where he was standing or what the camera angle was, of course, the microphone doesn't really have anything to do with the camera, his voice sounded exactly the same, enough so that I was wondering if it was ADR. The after the fact, basically where you record over your own video.
Right.
And right. There was only one moment. It's actually when he was walking down the hall, when he was walking down a hall, when his voice had the slightest bit of difference to the way it was captured. And I asked Michael if this was just, Apple, doing what it takes and spending the money to get amazing capture, or if it was ADR. And he said it could be either. But if it's ADR, that means everything was recorded in advance. And I would rather see a live show.
I don't think you're going to see live shows anymore. And the reason I say that is because Apple has found that they can create an incredibly tight presentation by pre-recording everything, which I'm sure everything we saw was pre-recorded, and then doing their nice editing to it, and then giving us this incredibly polished, super tight video.
Yeah, I am sure that you are correct. I am also sure that you're correct that Apple's going to stick with this for the foreseeable future, and I would rather see a live show. So think about it this way. Part of what made Steve Jobs' performances so remarkable was how effortlessly he made it look smooth and polished. How effortlessly he disguised how much work.
Eventually, he made it look that way.
What do you mean?
When he first came back to Apple.
Oh, yeah, fair.
And was doing.
Fair.
Yeah. I mean, he had some rough prezos.
Yeah, right. So I'm definitely thinking of the last, several years worth of shows.
I'm absolutely with you.
And he would, we know that he would obsessively rehearse these things until everything was nailed down. And I get that, too. And I also get the sort of anxiety that might give to anyone trying to, trying to do that, like anything, especially if you're working for someone like Steve Jobs, God forbid someone else does something wrong. And then, you get blamed for it. But the point is that there's a character to the to that show in particular, and to a lesser extent, the show before, where it starts feeling very disingenuous, because it does feel like it is, that might have been the fifth take. And that lack of disingenuous quality. There we go. Don't anyone hear me say that. that disingenuous quality was not great to watch. I'd rather see a mistakeful show that is people doing their best than I want to see tech execs doing the fifth or 10th or 20th take.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. On the other side of that, it's nice to watch presentations where we don't have wasted time.
Give me the waste of time.
I don't want the waste of time.
I don't want the waste of time either, but I don't want the sort of canned 5th and 20th take that we saw. I mean, with all due respect to the folks who worked their butt off to make that and put all that together. And like I said, I really enjoyed all the goofy stuff that Craig Federighi did, and that is obviously only possible by pre-recording it. But mm-hmm. I would rather have that sort of live. Like I feel like the first remote keynote that Apple did was live.
Maybe I'm trying to remember now, and I honestly can't remember. It may have been live. I know that they had the whole disclaimer thing that they put up about how everyone was masked unless they were on camera, and they're doing distancing and isolation stuff.
You're talking at the end of this one.
No, I didn't even notice if they did that at the end of this one.
They did that at the end of this one.
Okay, so that tells me that they've been putting that at the end of every one of these. Which actually I think is good.
Well, yeah.
You know, remind
obviously
people.
It's good. Obviously it's good that, you know, Apple is saying, hey, you know, we're following this whole science thing. That's fantastic. I don't know. Listeners, what do y'all think? Like, you know, is the smoothed, polished aspect of the show, the timing, the lack of any wasted time whatsoever. Do you prefer that? Do you prefer the genuineness of a live show, even when it has gaffes or a little bit of wasted time? What do you think? Let us know. You can write us over at contextmachine.io.
Right, and let us know if Brian's wrong and I'm right.
So you'd rather have this. This
I'm totally okay with these polished type presentations. I mean, if they were doing these once a quarter, which they don't, then maybe, you know, I'd lean a little bit more towards what you're looking at or what you want. But no, I'm totally fine with these highly produced presentations that they're putting out.
I also, you know, it's interesting to me. Apple is one of those, depending on how closely you follow, you know, either tech news and or political news. Apple is one of those companies that wants people back in the office, and I've long surmised it's because of the whole thing about Steve's interest in the accidental meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So there is value. There is certainly value in face-to-face meetings. There is certainly value. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's also a lot of value in, like, you know, not dying from a pandemic. But outside of that, there is value in face-to-face meetings. There's value in people getting together. There's value in face-to-face relationships. And there is also value in people getting together for something like an annual show. Now, the reality is that a tiny percentage of the worldwide Apple developer community could attend the live in-person WWDC. And by doing WWDC the way Apple is doing, they could actually essentially serve every Apple developer, every developer in the Apple community who wants to be there. And there's a lot of value in that too. I would argue that the best of both worlds would be the best. So you let people get together, you let the tech press get together and come and meet with these developers too, because face-to-face meetings are important. And you let people do the extracurricular activities, and then the millions of people who can't attend can attend virtually. You get the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I would also argue that the same is true for the media events, where you bring the media there, you get the face-to-face meetings. The media gets the face-to-face meetings with each other, which I would argue Apple has a vested interest in encouraging, and then anyone can still watch it. So here you have Apple, who is like all keen on its own employees getting those face-to-face interactions, and yet now they're pushing its developer community towards not having that same thing. And there's a bit of a disconnect there.
Maybe a disconnect, or maybe an understanding of how it just simply has to work.
I hope we go back to the in-person events. I don't think we will, but I hope we do.
I think that what we will see is more like what we have right now. I think that depending on how things progress with the pandemic, that we may see that expand so that there's more people, because I mean, there was an in-person component to WWDC this year. So that might grow some. But I think for the most part, what we saw this year is what the event will be going forward.
I fear that you are correct. I hope that it's not so. We will see.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm with you. As someone like you who has worked remotely for actual decades, and is totally fine with that, I appreciate the in-person time that we would get at events. It was incredibly valuable. And being able to talk with developers in person was incredibly valuable too.
Yep. Sure was. Sure would continue to be. But we will see what happens. We will see what happens. All right. So we spent that's kind of a long time on that. So why don't we jump to, do you want to talk about like Passkey first or the M2?
Let's talk about Passkey.
Okay. Let's talk about Passkey. Hi, Jeff. So what's this Passkey thing that Apple introduced?
Brian, it's this clever thing that, or this clever technology that's come into the market that Apple did not invent, but they're embracing. And it's the idea that you shouldn't need to remember passwords to get into your various accounts. And so what happens when you use pass keys? You're using, like in this case, biometric data, meaning like a thumbprint or an eye scan or a face scan, something like that, to verify who you are. And then it generates an authentication code that allows you to log in. And the great thing about a technology like this, beyond the fact that you're not bound to traditional passwords to log into things, is that this is incredibly difficult to spoof, because you need to have the physical characteristics, the biometric information, to make this work. So if you're running a password cracker system, it's not going to work with this. And so seeing Apple embrace this, I mean, this is good, because this is ultimately where we're going with authentication systems. So having Apple get in on this is a good thing for the technology. And then seeing Apple set this up so that their whole passkey system will work with non-Apple devices as well is great, because if they limited it just to working with Apple specific products, it wouldn't be that useful. You know, it'd be like saying, yes, you can use Apple Pay, but you can only use it at terminals where Apple has sold a company that equipment. You want this to be universal and used everywhere. And that's what Apple's doing with their passkey support in iOS 16.
And they say that they're working with both Google and Microsoft.
Which is good. That's exactly what they need to do.
So the question is, is this the end of the era for, you know, LastPass and 1Password and all the various companies who are in business to try to make using the existing concepts actually work?
So when I jumped in and just said no, let me modify that and say, for the companies that are making password management tools that are not forward thinking, yeah, they're going to be in trouble. But for companies that are making products like 1Password, where they get the value in pass keys, those companies are already either including pass key support or are in the process of adopting it. And so then their products just become much, much more useful, because if you have logins that I'll just start calling them legacy logins now, like traditional passwords and two-factor authentication.
Which technically, by the way, right now is all logins, but go ahead.
Right. But hey, you know, think positive. You have a system that can handle that. And then for everything as it transitions into proper passkey support, then great. Your system can manage that as well. There is a lot of value in products like 1Password that goes beyond the password management part, which is look at all of that other sensitive data that you can keep in a product like 1Password. That you want to be secure, but you also want to have easy access to.
Don't get me wrong. If a leapfrogging technology or even concept is going to put legacy password keeper companies out of business, that's fine in the grand sense, although, you know, I have great empathy for everyone on an individual level. Mm-hmm. Right. And in no way am I trying to say Apple shouldn't do this because it's going to hurt Agile Bits or whoever it is that operates LastPass, etc. That's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get that. Also, keep in mind that a lot of these companies that are making the really serious password management tools, they've moved beyond individual users, and they have embraced providing their services to companies to the enterprise level.
How would passkey work with a shared login? A login that I have multiple people at my company that need to be able to access the same account. I'm guessing then this current iteration won't really support that.
No, that's not a problem. I mean, think about how it works today. You have multiple people that need to access your company content management system.
No, they all
have their individual logins.
Okay, so back up. So now I've got one login because it's not my company, but we're sharing. Like, one of the things I love about 1Password is that you and I can both have Brian and Jeff at brianandjeff.com with the password as our login, but now we can also share 2FA, right? Mm-hmm. That login can have 2FA associated with it with an authenticator app that is also that each of us are keeping in 1Password.
I see what you're saying.
Right. We wouldn't be able to do that
when you're doing biometric data. I don't know the technical part for that, but I can give you the easy answer, which is I know it's doable.
It's doable at the very least eventually. It may take time for that sort of thing.
I think it's actually doable now, Yeah. So by the time it's actually going to matter to you and to me, it's not going to be an issue.
Jeff, I need that 2FA code.
Hold on. Let me pop my finger off and send it over to you.
All right. Here's another question. With biometric password systems, what happens if I get into, and I'm going to risk the dogs barking, into a horrible disfiguring accident where I lose my hands and my face is mangled?
That's a really good question. Because the idea is if you set up your authentication system correctly, you're not relying on like a single fingerprint.
Yeah, but people have lost hands.
Right. So
people have lost what happens eyes.
If you
people yeah. have, you know, people have had their noses smashed and broken and their face smashed in. I mean, like these are horrible things. And I'm not trying to be too dark about it. But it's still
a legit valid question. Yeah. What if you lose all of the elements of your body that you were using for biometric identification? And I could give you the glib answer, which is you probably have bigger problems.
No, you probably don't.
To worry about. But at the same time, yeah, what do you do?
I mean, like, because right now, Touch ID and Face ID are both essentially tied to your password. As long as you know your passcode for entering your iOS device or your password for entering your, you actually have to enter your password to first unlock Touch ID on a Mac, right? You have to enter your passcode to unlock Face ID and Touch ID on an iOS device.
Mm-hmm.
Passkey is not like that. Passkey is not just like biometric tying into a password, at least as far as I know. Excuse me. That's my understanding. And I say that because I realized that as I was saying it, that I may not know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And I don't have the answer to that. I don't know what happens in that kind of situation, but now you have me really curious because this is the kind of thing that I just love knowing about. Great. Now you have either intentionally or unintentionally got me all fired up to reach out to our friends at Agile Bits.
Oh, thank goodness.
Ask them someone's going to clarify.
Because it probably isn't going to be me. So great. Please do. let's circle back.
No, seriously. I want to know. So I'm going to ask them and they're awesome people. So I have no doubt that they'll fill me in.
Yeah. I love one password. I loves it.
Same.
All right. So that's passkey. Other than my dark visions of, you know, catastrophic futures, it does seem like going a terrific
Anakin Skywalker on your passkeys. Too soon.
I've got the high ground. That's so ridiculous.
I knew you would do it. I knew you'd say it if I just waited.
It's too late, Anakin. Oh my goodness. Or it's all over. It's all over now. Is that what he's what's the line? What's the actual line? It's all over. I've got the
high ground. I don't remember.
Something like that. Still bothers me. Really bothers me, man. Bothers me. It's so stupid. Like you're not shelling him.
I totally triggered you, and I knew what I was doing.
And I allowed it to happen, even knowing what you were doing. All right. Regardless. By the way, I started speaking of TV. I started Stranger Things. Have you started it? The new season.
I binged the whole thing.
What? What?
I binged the whole thing.
Speak up. I can't. Why?
Oh, because I couldn't stop watching. Like I watched the whole season over 3 days.
Oh, the new season. You've already finished it. You binged. I thought you were saying that you gave up on it.
Oh, no. I binged through.
Binged. I was hearing benched.
Oh,
benched. My apologies. I'll
start working on my diction.
Excellent. I would appreciate that. My apologies. And I, let's not make. No one needs to hear any of that. So anyway, yeah. I just started it. The first episode, really loved it. Love the. I'm not even going to call it a spoiler. I just love the slow burn introduction to, you know, the season.
I think the pacing through the entire season is wonderful. Mm. And I was curious where it was going to end, because this is not a spoiler. We've known this ever since they announced this season. This season is actually part one and part two seasons. So we have the second half coming, I think, in July. Oh, okay. And they did that very intentionally.
Okay. I am apparently behind on my Stranger Things lore. Regardless, we're really enjoying it so far. Really enjoying it so far. Really enjoying it so far. Really takes me back. They nail the 80s better than I think any other show since the 80s. Like the big bad, the guy that played the big bad in season 3 was just like, I hated that guy in school. I hated the preppy jerks in the first episode of the new season. I hated them in school. I freaking hated. I almost had to bleep myself. So they nail mm-hmm. the 80s better than, it doesn't look like a cartoon. It looks like the freaking 80s.
Yes. As people that lived in the 80s, which we both did, I feel like they really nailed it. I mean, it feels so 80s.
Right. Whereas
perfectly, they nailed it.
You look at a show like, look at a movie like Back to the Future, and their vision of the 50s was very much cartoon vision of the 50s. And I know that's not what they were trying to do, but I say that. It's not like I knew what the 50s was like, so maybe I'm wrong there. But it felt like a cartoon version of the 50s.
Well, it had the stereotypical feel that we see in so many shows and movies about 50s.
Right. Right. Oh, I had this thing that I realized when I was watching episode one. Mm-hmm. of the new season of Stranger Things. So I always liked Steve Harrington.
Yes.
Okay. I figured out part of why I like that character so much. And it's because, here's the thing. It took the new character of Eddie for me to recognize this, to figure this out. Mm-hmm. Steve Harrington reminds me of my buddy, David Heinemann. I went to high school with.
Oh, okay.
He was, he might have actually been a year. I think we were in the same year. I didn't really get to know him until the last 2 years of high school. He was very attractive. He played guitar very well. He could do all of Van Halen's Eruption. And which, you know, ask your grandparents, that was a thing. Back in the day,
that was a thing.
Actually, it's still kind of a thing. And he's the kind of kid that when he walked down the hall, all the guys and all the girls were watching him, you know, like, you know, heads pivot. And he knew everybody. Everybody knew him. And for some reason, he befriended me. In this analogy, I am Dustin from Stranger Things.
Okay.
And this stand-in for my friend David Heinemann didn't occur to me until I saw Eddie, who doesn't the only resemblance Eddie has to David Heinemann is the fact that he was a metal guitarist. Spoiler.
Okay.
Sort of, not really. But anyway, that's what keyed it in, and as I was like, it was an emotional moment for me when I finally put this together as I was watching last night.
That's actually cool.
Is it? Or is it the sort of thing that I should do my reverse edit sound out? Take it out.
No, because you've got this very personal tie into the show now. And for those of us of a certain vintage, There are things in the show that we have that personal connection with, and that's one for you. Here's something I realized as I was watching the last episode of the first half of the new season. Steve and Nancy and Jonathan, you know, the older kids, they're our age. They graduated high school when we did.
In 84.
In 84.
Yeah, you're right. They're all out of high school. Right. And and this season takes place in 86.
Right. Yes. And 84, which is the first year, they're seniors in high school.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So when I realized that, which, how could it have taken me this long into this series to realize that? It made the characters feel suddenly a lot older to me and a lot younger at the same time, because human brains are weird like that.
They are weird like that. You know what is not weird, Jeff?
What?
Collide. Collide sends employees important, timely, and relevant security recommendations for their Linux, Mac, and Windows devices right inside Slack. Collide is perfect for organizations that care deeply about compliance and security, but don't want to get there by locking down devices to the point where they become unusable. Instead of frustrating your employees, Collide educates them about security and device management while directing them to fix important problems. You can visit collide.com/ACM today to sign up. That's KOLIDE.com/ACM. You can enter your email when prompted to receive your free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. At Collide, they know that end users are IT admins' most significant untapped resource, and that they're key to solving the most challenging to fix security issues, including, for instance, instructing developers to set passphrases, we were just talking about passwords, on unencrypted SSH keys, finding plain text two-factor backup codes, and teaching end users how to store them securely. We were kind of talking about that too. Convincing employees to uninstall evil browser extensions that may sell their browser history, which we should all do whether or not we're working, I might add.
Right.
These are just some of the many use cases not solved by locking down devices. So again, you can try Collide with all its features on an unlimited number of devices for free for 14 days, no credit card required. And you can try it out at collide.com/ACM. That's KOLIDE.com/ACM. And you can find links to that in the show notes. We appreciate them sponsoring this week's show. And I appreciate you allowing me that getting to the point segue, Jeff Gamet.
Oh, you handled that beautifully. I am absolutely impressed.
Sure. Let's go with that. Let's jump over to, we've had two unplanned topics. I kind of feel like we should, because I know that we're running out of time. So I'm thinking.
Right, because I have a life.
tell me what that's about later. We don't have time to do it now. There's one, I think we could probably dedicate a show to the third topic. Another show.
Yes.
Other than
we could.
Other than this episode. Okay. So the second topic, this is our fourth topic today, but our second topic that we were going to talk about.
Meth is hard.
Did you say meth?
Because I said math, but
I think either works. The M2 processor. Yeah,
okay. I have to tell you the meth story real quick from today.
Okay.
So, one of the local reporters that I follow on Twitter, he periodically will just quote one of the calls from the police scanners, And one of the calls today was to get a police officer to go over to one of the open spaces that's here in town to check on his prairie dog that's acting kind of weird, you know, like it's on drugs. And so it immediately devolved into the prairie dog meth problem in Boulder, Colorado.
Which is not necessarily...
Which is actually not a thing. I mean, they'd be doing weed here.
Okay, fair enough. Although I'm thinking if you go out... Anyway, all fair. So here's the deal. While we have time... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Apple introduced the M2 processor. And here's the thing, man. I haven't even gotten my M1 Max 14-inch MacBook Pro that I ordered a month ago. Mm-hmm. Hasn't even shipped. And here Apple is introducing the M2.
Yeah.
it's like I'm waiting now for last year's technology.
Well, to be fair, you're waiting for the technology that is going to be more powerful than if you were to get an M2 MacBook Air.
You think so?
Yeah. You still have several advantages with your M1 series Mac that's on the way.
My M1 Max series Mac.
Actually, yes, your M1 Pro. Max series.
I can't remember if I got the Pro or the Max now.
But regardless of which one you chose.
That's how long ago I ordered it.
Yeah. You ordered it so long ago it's obsolete before it ships. I'm not helping. No. Okay. So you have multi-display support, and you can only do one external display with the M2 Air.
I don't care about that with this particular device. This particular device is definitely a mobile device.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and ooh, but you know what? I think, huh?
It supports 32 gigs of RAM, and the M2 supports a maximum currently of 24.
Yeah. So there's a thing. I was about to tell you another thing you get, and I forgot what it was. I believe you have more buses for the Thunderbolt ports.
Yeah. Also probably not pertinent to me, but will be to some people. And yep. So will the displays be pertinent to and you know of concern to some users. Turns out mm-hmm. I guess that my needs are not like everyone's needs, whatever.
I think you're looking at this from the wrong angle, Brian. The correct angle is what's up with people not having the same priorities in their computers What's wrong with them?
Why are they doing it wrong? That's an excellent point, Jeff.
You've got the right perspective.
Now that's an excellent point. All right. But seriously, I am a little surprised. I mean, considering the fact that Apple is still shipping an Intel-based Mac Pro, right? I'm a little surprised that we're already seeing the M2. However, if we look at the past as prologue, Apple has to get the M2 mm-hmm. out before it can get the M2 Pro and the M2 Max and the M2 Ultra out. And it seems, I'm not going to call it a safe assumption, a reasonable assumption to say that the Mac Pro would probably use some version of the M2 Ultra. That Apple has not announced yet.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're right. And especially since we didn't see any sort of Mac Pro tease even at WWDC. And I figured if they were ready to talk about what sort of chips and configurations, at least horsepower, that we're going to see in the new Mac Pro, that we would have seen something at WWDC, because it is a developer event and developers like their big horsepower machines.
Yeah, or at least,
and rightly so,
like fantasizing about having those big horsepower machines. I mean, Apple's biggest horsepower these days is mostly aimed at John Keat and then video developers.
Right. You know, which means they can get most everyone that that they're targeting into one room and talk to them about the machine.
That's true. That is true. And I would also argue that if you're on the sidelines looking for a Mac Pro, you should probably get the M1 Studio, Mac Studio with the Ultra, M1 Ultra, M1 Max Ultra. What do they call it? I've got it. It's on my desk. What do you call this thing?
I don't know. Because the naming is so weird.
If only we had some kind of way of...
Yeah, hold on.
I'm clicking.
Mac Studio.
I'm clicking. M1 Ultra. It's just the M1 Ultra. If you're waiting on a Mac Pro...
You didn't order the M1 Ultra Max Pro?
The M1 Ultra...
Ultra Max Pro.
No, it's just M1 Ultra. Wait, M1 Ultra.
No.
Mac Studio was Brent, the M1 Ultra.
If everyone you're waiting, else was laughing with me while you're like, wait, what?
If you're waiting for an M-class Mac Pro and you need it, you should probably just get the Mac Studio, because I think we're looking at another year, close to another year, before we get that M1, M2 Ultra processor to stick in this thing.
After WWDC, I have come up with a new timeline.
Okay.
And we're basically on the same page here. So here's my timeline. The M Series Mac Pro is going to get revealed later this year, but will not be available until sometime in 2023.
Okay. I suspect, sometime in 2023, but I suspect it will not be early 2023. You may be right about the reveal. If it ends up being a 2023 reveal and ship, that will not surprise me. I like your reasoning, but it would not surprise me if it's even after that.
That's possible. We're getting to the point where Apple really needs to do something about the desktop computer that has Pro in the name.
I agree with that for the desktop. Yeah. Oh, here's something too, and I know that we need to go. I pity anyone trying to make a decision between an M2 MacBook Air or the M2 MacBook Pro and the 14 and 16 inch version. Like, I mean, if you need the memory, if you need the memory and the performance, it is still probably a no brainer to get the M1 Pro and Max. Right?
Yes.
But if you don't, and you're trying to decide, you know, like you want that little bit of power and maybe you want that little bit, you know, it's become a much harder decision. The MacBook Air with the M2 is a very compelling device.
It is. It's so compelling that that as they were running through the specs and I'm sitting on my couch, I was thinking, you know, here's a MacBook Air that can outperform the MacBook Pro that's sitting on my desk today.
Because you don't,
it would cost a lot less.
You have an Intel-based MacBook Pro.
I still have an Intel-based Mac.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It outperform it in terms of power and power consumption.
Right.
And maybe graphics, but I don't know how much that matters to you currently.
Since I'm not gaming, or at least, well, no, I was going to say at least not seriously, but no, I don't game on my Mac. It wouldn't matter that much to me. The graphics performance actually matters to me more in the iPad Pro because that's where I do video editing.
Well, and funny enough, the iPad is essentially going to be our topic for our next episode. And
I should make a Trello card.
Let's do that. Let's make that a go. And the M2, the as yet unannounced M2 iPad Pro is going to be bonkers.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like you should wait for that.
Yeah, I agree. I should wait for that. And actually, I've thought through this whole thing enough about what should I do about a new iPad Pro. I still have a 10.5-inch iPad Pro. Mm. And yeah, but it's great for beta testing.
Oh, so, for sure.
I put the developer beta on that, and then right afterwards made an appointment at the Genius Bar so I can get a new battery in it, because it kind of needs a new battery. Yeah, really good bad. Call.
Yeah, good. So good call.
Yeah,
good call. All right, we have more to talk about on WWDC. We have at least one more topic, and I'm thinking that we can probably come up with additional topics. But I know that you do have somewhere you got to be, and we've also we're closing in on an hour,
which for us is actually pretty tight. So go us.
Hey, last week's show that I posted last night was a mere 30 minutes and in tens of seconds.
Yeah, well, we had a really hard out on that day.
Oh, that's
when
true.
I say we, I mean me.
Right. Also, yeah, you had Shameless Hussies to to go spend your time with. All right. That's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything.
Is it really?
It is. If you have anything to comment on.
Oh, I do.
And or question, you can write us over at contextmachine.io. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And this week, and I'm getting back over to it, this week's show was brought to you by Collide. We so appreciate them. Remember, you can visit collide.com/ACM to sign up today. That's KOLIDE.com/ACM. You can enter your email when prompted to receive your free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. By the way, you can write me over on Twitter at GeekTells, TELLS. Where are you, Jeff?
I'm over at Jay Gamut on the Twitters.
On all the things.
Yeah, I'm pretty consistent on the socials. Yep, so if you search for Jay Gamut, it's probably me.
Yes, that is probably true. And this is probably the end. I don't know if that's a threat or a promise.
It's a matter of perspective.
It is.